Thank you so much for joining us for SPIRIT, the stimulating program initiative for retirees that inspires the way. I'm Judy Steinig, Senior Director of the OU's Department of Community Projects and Partnerships and Coordinator and Host for SPIRIT. The OU started SPIRIT several years ago as an on-site program, and now we're happy to present it as an online program for retirees, not yet retirees, baby boomers, empty nesters, sandwich generation parents, and seniors, everyone who's looking for educational, intellectual, and inspirational growth. Now, since the beginning of the pandemic, SPIRIT continues to be a safe and ideal way for everyone to learn together in a virtual setting. Today's program is everything you need to know about buying a home in Israel with Capital Real Estate and Partners. This is part two. Part one was presented in January and is in the SPIRIT archives. We are delighted to bring back to the SPIRIT Forum Ben Levine, co-founder of Capital Real Estate and Partners. He will be joined by Jane Ullman, real estate attorney, who specializes in Israel real estate and wills and inheritances. Their complete bios are on the SPIRIT webpage and in the emails you received in this program. I'm delighted and honored to turn the SPIRIT Forum over to Ben Levine and Jane Ullman. Thank you, everyone, for joining us.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Judy. Really, really appreciate it. Thank you so much for coming this morning to be with us. We really do appreciate your time. Any questions can be put on the public chat, or both me and Jane are available to be emailed or called after. All our details will be sent out. This event we're doing tonight is slightly different from the regular event me and Jane do around the world. What it is basically me and Jane will be speaking for 10 minutes each, talking about what we do and how we can help you and the process of buying in Israel. But also what we're bringing on is a couple of people to talk about specific areas, specific cities. We're going to have a chat about Modi'in. We're also going to have a chat about Jerusalem, just to give you the feeling of what it is to live or buy property or rent property in those cities. So that's the day for you. We're happy to take questions throughout, and we hope it's helpful. I'm turning it over to Jane. Have a good enjoy.
I just unmuted myself. Good evening. A bit about myself. My name is Jane Ullman. I am a partner in a small boutique law firm in Jerusalem. We handle property transactions, sales, purchases, rental agreements all over the country. And we also do wills and inheritances, which goes together as kind of, according to the British system, known as conveyancing. I studied law in Israel at Bar-Ilan University, which I attended after I received my first degree from UC Santa Barbara. I'm originally from Santa Barbara. And I've lived in Israel for 28 years, and I'm an attorney for over 21 years. So I started giving a lot of these lectures, first with Nefesh B'Nefesh, and then with other groups, both in person and since the pandemic, a lot online, in order to be able to give people answers and access to the information to help them really kind of understand the system and the difference in the systems. I've asked Ruthie Kramer, say hi, Ruthie, to come join us, both because Ruthie is a friend of mine, but I actually met her as my client. And she also lives in Modi'in. My office is in Jerusalem, but I've lived in Modi'in for 11 and a half years. So Ben asked me and Ruthie to speak also a little bit about Modi'in, because that's not a community that's always addressed in some of these forums. And he thought it would be interesting for us to bring a bit of perspective on what Anglo life is in Modi'in. So Ruthie, first tell everybody a little bit about yourself. You have an interesting background, which kind of bridges a lot of gaps. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay. Hi, everybody. My name is Ruthie Kramer. Originally, as you can hear, I'm from England, but I lived in America, in New York, for 15 years prior to making Aliyah. I made Aliyah 3 years ago. I think we're in year four now, in 2018. And my whole family made Aliyah before I did, hence we were the last one standing. And that's why we are here. We chose Modi'in for many reasons. Mainly because my family are here, but also because it's, you know, a very central city. It's very good if you're a commuter. It's literally 20 minutes from the airport. Not even. I met Jane through, as she said, through Nefesh B'Nefesh. I was introduced to her by our friend of Newmark, who worked for Nefesh B'Nefesh, because we were looking to maybe buy a home, but I didn't think it was going to even happen or be possible because, you know, it's so, can be so stressful and a lot can go into it. But Jane helped my, she held my hand the whole way through. And she was fantastic and very
so you had that process. You hadn't even been to Israel. Explain that we did how we did everything from afar.
Yes, I had come out as for a pilot trip in January. I actually found a rental that we thought we would rent. In the end, my husband came out in February, found a house to buy. I hadn't even seen the house, but we did everything from everything online, everything through email, through speaking. And it was a very smooth process, I would say. I mean, of course, it's stressful, but like in terms of what needed to be done, it was a very smooth process. We got what we were told what we needed to get. We got what we needed to get. Jane took care of everything. And we were able to buy a house in Israel. And the feeling of buying a home in Israel, I can't tell you, it was such an amazing feeling. And in fact, Jane, I don't know if I ever told you this, but when we finally received the contract, I was in camp in America, and she writes, this is like a lawyer who I didn't even know at the time. We became friends after we moved here. And she writes on the bottom of the contract in Hebrew, like Mazel Tov, or like buy it now, Mom, Israel, like it's like how just from somebody from America, England, not even in Israel yet, but knowing that you've bought this house, and this message from the lawyer, who it was just very a positive, wonderful experience. But Modi, do you want to hear about Modi?
Yeah, talk about Modi, and maybe also talk a little bit about the different demographic groups. You know, besides, you know, the 40 age group or the younger age group, talk about, you know, and what you also know about the shuls or what kind of services people might be interested in hearing about, things that maybe you would have been interested in hearing about before you made Aliyah.
Right. I'm in my 40s. I came with my family. As I said, my family, I have brothers that live in Modi Inn, so that's why I chose Modi Inn. But we did look at other communities. I have friends in Renana, I have friends in other places. But Modi Inn, I will tell you, it's very Anglo. So if your Hebrew isn't great, I started Ulpan. I lasted like 2 days and then I just, you know, other things came up. I was working. But you really can get by without having to speak any Hebrew. Of course, you can also learn Hebrew and speak Hebrew and you'll be fine as well. But you shouldn't worry if you cannot speak Hebrew. It doesn't really seem to matter. You'll pick up the things, you'll figure out the things that you need to learn, and then you'll be okay. There's a variety of shuls here, all on top of each other, all spread out as well, like depending on where you end up living or choosing to live, there is so many shuls to choose from. Quite a lot of Anglo options as well. And different ages, like there's, my parents made Aliyah also, they have a lot of friends here in Modi Inn. There's like an over 55s group. I know that they get together every week. They have things on Shabbat, they have TLM during the week, like different hikes all around the country or trips. So there's definitely a big multi-generational people, like living in Modi Inn, families, parents, children, grandchildren, grandparents. So there's a wide range of people living here.
Thank you. Ben, do you have any other specific questions you want Ruthie to address?
Firstly, thank you. Sorry, let me turn my video on. Thank you so much. I guess you're well covered.
Maybe one other thing I'll mention also is that the Modi Inn Mall is right in the center, and the bus station and the train station, it's right in the center of town. Like, I have friends who live
there's a new train going to Jerusalem.
there's a new train happening going to Jerusalem, but I have friends who live in Efrat. There's not even a mall there or a bank or anything. And in Modi'in, you have everything really at your fingertips. There's multiple little malls all over the place, but there's a big central mall, which is near the bus station, which is near the train station, which is, it's very convenient and very...
lots of kosher places to eat.
Oh yes, many kosher places to eat, very important. They all deliver also, so don't worry about that.
Ruthie, I have two questions, just very quickly. Would you say, obviously people can, but do a lot, is there a significant number of people who don't live there, who come just like maybe 2 months a year or like pop in or not really?
So I have friends who have parents who have maybe bought a place and they come visit. We actually have a family member who owns an apartment or a house in Modi'in, and they come a few months a year. And there are definitely commuter families, not commuter families, people who own property or rent property, but don't necessarily live here.
Okay. And the last question I have is, I mean, only from my experience, I've never lived in Modi'in. You need a car to live in Modi'in, or no, am I wrong? Just out of interest.
Listen, obviously having a car is helpful, but as I said, the bus situation, there's many, you know, there's bus stops on every road, every street corner. If you don't have a car, I don't think it means that you can't survive. I think having a car obviously is helpful. But I don't think it's an absolute necessity the second you
get. I think it kind of depends. If you live in the area where Ruthie and I live, the bus service is maybe more spotty. But as Ruthie was saying, there's a whole central area, and there are several apartment complexes there, which a lot of people that don't want to have a car live in, so that you have much more central access to the central bus station or the train. So if you didn't want to have a car, I would suggest perhaps focusing on more the central areas of town.
Right, I suppose it's a little bit like living in Manhattan. If you live in Manhattan, you don't necessarily need a car. You can just get buses or the subway or walk, because things are more local. But if you live,
I kind of adore that you just compared Modi'in to Manhattan.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you so much.
If anyone has any questions, I'm always happy to answer. Even if I don't stay till the end of the Zoom, you can always email Jane Shulk.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Ruthie. Thank you so much.
Pleasure.
Perfect. Okay, we're now going to lead on to Jane, who's going to tell you about the legal aspect of buying in Israel.
Okay, so in Israel, the best thing that you can do is kind of leave your expectations behind you, the things that you expect to see in a purchase transaction. I'm mostly going to talk about purchase now because I only have, 7 minutes. So I also deal with rentals. If you have any questions on those, I've given a flyer to the organizers of the event that can send it out by email, and I'm always happy to answer any questions by email. In general, in Israel, there are two main types of purchase transaction. One is that you're buying an already existing apartment, and they refer to that in Hebrew as buying secondhand, like buying a secondhand car. Or you're buying new construction, which is also known as buying on paper, buying from a kablan, buying on plans. All of those refer to buying something that's in the construction process. And that can happen at many stages, even before they've gotten the building permits, before they've broken ground, or sometimes you buy it and it's already ready, but you would be the first owner. So let's focus first on the secondhand purchase, because that's much more something that most people are familiar with. But the system is very different. So again, leaving your expectations behind you will help you. In Israel, the main difference between the American or the British system is that all of your due diligence is performed before you sign the contract. That means that you put in a non-binding offer through your agent after you found a property, and you agree the basic business terms, the price and the date of possession, which can be 3, 6, 9 months from when you're signing the contract. And then at that point, the deal gets turned over to the lawyers and we begin the games. The first object is to get a draft of the contract from the seller's attorney. And at that point, we begin our due diligence. That includes me reviewing the contract. I am also your title insurance. In Israel, there is no title insurance, and your lawyer performs that function. So title needs to be checked. And depending on where the property is registered, it needs to be checked in a couple of different places, because there are 3, 4, 5, 6 combinations of how a property can be registered in Israel. This is why, one of the main reasons why it's a real specialty within the legal field, because you have to know what you're looking for and you have to know what constitutes good title. So I'm researching title and I'm negotiating the contract, the legal undertakings in the contract, the business terms, to make sure that what's in the contract is what we were expecting. And then we might bring other people onto our team to also help us perform due diligence. One of the things that we would want to have done usually is an inspection, a building inspection and an engineer. Unlike in the United States, where you get an inspection report, hand it to the seller, and they perform all of the repairs. In Israel, it's really much more like taking a used car to the garage to have it checked out. Do you still like this property for this price with these defects that are existent in the property? Sometimes there are big, big defects which the seller would agree to repair, but most of the time the engineering report is for your own edification to understand what it is that you're buying. In a Hebrew language contract, it will say in big English letters, as is, capital English letters, and that's how you're expected to buy the property. So I consider it very essential to make sure that you are aware of what this as is and get the inspection report beforehand. Similarly, if you are going to be taking a mortgage, and both Ben and I have excellent connections with mortgage brokers, which can help you take a mortgage from abroad, you're allowed to borrow up to 50% of the loan to value as a foreign resident before you've made Aliyah. If you're going to be taking a mortgage, then you would want to get an appraisal before we sign, because again, there are no contingencies for financing. You have to make sure that you have your financing in place before you buy. So the appraisal also sets the loan to value amount, meaning it's either the contract amount, or if it under appraises, that's the new amount for the loan. So if you're buying something for 3 million shekels and it only appraises at 2.8, they will loan you 50% of the 2.8. In addition, an appraiser in Israel also serves the function of being a planning expert, meaning that if we want to make sure that the house is built according to permit, if there are any deviations from the permit, if you were told, for instance, by the agent, yes, you can for sure enclose that mirpeset and build that extra bedroom that you want, I want to know beforehand, before we sign, that that's a for sure thing. And the person that gives us that answer is an appraiser who does the planning checks, goes in, pulls all of the zoning, pulls all the permits and says, yes, you can use, there are unused meters. Not only are there unused meters, but it can be used for that purpose. I want to know all of those things. I'll give you an example. I had this week a file which came to me. Someone's buying an apartment in Hadera. They were told it's a 5-room apartment. It turns out that it was really registered as a 3-room apartment. Half of the kitchen is built into a storeroom, and 2 of the bedrooms are built in this space that's not meant to be used for a residential space. All of those things will affect an appraisal, and it will underappraise, meaning it would affect their ability to get a full loan. So those are the kinds of things on due diligence that we would want to perform before we're signing this contract. We also want to make sure that we have set up how you would move money into the country. In Israel, there are 3 options to move money before a contract. One is your lawyer opens a trust account for you, which is a specific account for this transaction only, and then I make payments for you from that account. Or you use one of a few transfer companies. There are only a few that we recommend, because many are not able to perform the functions that we need, make the payments for you. They can only convert the money and then they still have to stick it somewhere and you don't have an account, so that's not useful. Or you can open a private account, which is generally opened if you're doing a mortgage. Most of the banks don't want to do it for a foreign resident if you're not also opening a mortgage. So if you're opening a mortgage, there would have to also be an account opened together with the mortgage from which you would pay the payments. So again, what we're doing is we're kind of having all those spinning plates in parallel while we're doing the due diligence. If any of the plates fall and we don't like this deal for you, then we can back out and the deal is not binding. Only a signed contract is binding. If once we lay out all of the information, and that's my job as your attorney, is also to ask the questions you don't know and to help you get all of that information to make an informed decision, then we buy the property. Now, an important piece of a puzzle for both types of property, both secondhand and buying off paper, is the purchase tax. Currently, the purchase tax for a foreign resident starts at 8%, and then it goes up to the next bracket, to 10%. If you establish your residency in Israel, you make Aliyah, within 2 years of when you sign the contract, you're eligible for a significant rebate. It's not a complete rebate because Israelis also have a tax, but then you would only be taxed at the same rate as an Israeli, and that's only for your first residential property. The moment you own more than one residential property or you're a foreign resident, you pay the higher tax. So that tax is paid within 60 days and you can't use mortgage money for it. So it's important to remember that's a significant expense within your Excel. Moving on to the first-hand properties off paper, I want to explain how those contracts work just for a few minutes. Those contracts are made up of three parts. You have the main legal contract, 30, 50 pages, which is my job. It's a big, you know, review. We go through clause by clause and make up a changes appendix to the master contract. And then you have the specs, the technical specifications known as the Mifrat, together with the plans. I often tell people that this is kind of Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebalpeh. They have to be read together, right? You can have a plan of this beautiful four bedroom apartment, but then you have to read what you're getting in it. Don't forget in Israel that most apartments are sold stripped, meaning that even when you're buying secondhand, it doesn't include appliances. Firsthand will not likely include air conditioning, shower enclosures, window screens. All of those things need to be added in afterwards unless they're included in the specs. And again, it needs to come into your budget when you're budgeting for yourself. So what happens is that we often send then the specs to a designer or an architect for you to help you review the specs and help you understand what it is that you're getting for your money. And if there are any questions or concerns or clarifications that we need to make sure that you have all of that information before we sign, because again, once we sign, the contract is binding. Very important piece of the puzzle for new construction is the fact that new construction contracts in Israel, the prices are linked to an inflationary index known as the Madad. That's a building index. And what that means is any unpaid balance is linked to an index, which is meant to protect the contractor against bankruptcy, meaning that if he's selling something to you for 2 million shekels, by the time he gets to build it, that 2 million shekels will still be able to buy him his building materials and still turn a profit and he won't go under. In reality, it's mixed. It's a bit of a shtick, meaning that the contractors make money off of it and your price will rise. Historically, the index rose between 1% and 3%, but 2021, as we saw everywhere in the world with the price of building materials rising sharply, saw a 6% increase in the building index. That means if you had 1 million shekels outstanding, it was now 1,060,000. Correct me if my math is wrong on that, but it means that it can go up. So sometimes if you're looking at a project that has 2, 3, 4 years to go out, and they've offered you these fantastic payment terms, only putting down 20% and paying 80% at the end, you have to realize that that 80% is linked to an index and it will rise. So you need to make sure that you're not budgeting to the end of your money. So just a couple of other words to the wise, and then I'm going to turn it over to Ben. Two things I want to make sure. When a lot of people rent when you come on Aliyah, which is an excellent thing to do. You're checking out a neighborhood. You're checking out, if this works for you. My piece of advice on that is you should also look at the prices of the purchases in that area. And if you wouldn't be able to purchase and you eventually want to purchase, don't rent there. Because what happens is you basically then have to make Aliyah twice. You've gotten settled, you're in this great area, and then you go, you want to buy a house and you can't afford it. But you knew you couldn't afford it in the beginning, but you're like, I'm just going to go to this one city because it's a nice landing. Check out the housing prices and try to rent in an area that would be feasible for you to buy also. The second piece of advice is that once you do buy a property in Israel, it's essential that you have an Israeli will. This can be a will limited to your property in Israel, and it doesn't have to replace your American limited, but Israeli law does not recognize, for instance, a trust, and many American wills leave their property to a trust. It's not considered a legal entity in Israel. So what happens is someone owns a house, they pass away, they go to probate the American will, and now they've left this house to something that doesn't exist as an entity in Israel. So really easy fix, there's no inheritance tax in Israel right now. Really easy fix is a simple Israeli will, 4 or 5 pages in English, not expensive. And then you kind of have solved years of headache for your heirs. So that's as fast as I can give it. There's a ton more. I could sit here and talk to you all for another hour, but I'm gonna let Ben go over and I'm happy to answer questions later.
Thank you so much, Jane. That was so helpful. And it's funny, when I hear Jane speak, I know how hard she's trying to keep that time as TikTok as she can. Because I've watched Jane speak on these topics for literally, you know, you can speak about them for 45 minutes at least. And what I'm going to talk about as well, I mean, we do these all around the world. Like literally, I'm in America 5 or 6 times a year and we do similar things, but we can all speak about these things for hours because there's so much information. But what we try and do is really give you the important things. So my name is Ben Levine. I have an office on King David Street called Capital Real Estate. So I'm a real estate broker. I have a team of brokers, 6 agents working in Katzmon, Baca, German Colony, Rehavia, Talbia, and Nona as well. But most importantly is all the theory I'm about to discuss exists everywhere except when I talk about pricing. If anyone is specifically wants to know about a different area, like Modiin, like Netanya, like Tel Aviv, anywhere, send me an email. And if you like what I say, I've got a similar-minded English person in most different places. And I'll be happy to connect them with you to try and help you. So that's just a quick thing. Why is a broker so important in Israel? Well, the real reason is that I think in America we call it Zillow, I think. Zillow doesn't really exist in Israel, okay? A slightly convoluted website called Yad Shtayim exists, which is in Hebrew, but forgetting the fact it's in Hebrew, it just isn't the most aesthetic, easy website. And then there's other websites like Janglo, but none of them are Zillow. None of them are like Rightmove in England. You're not just going in, seeing a good property, calling up an agent, going and seeing the house. Unfortunately, it's not so simple. But what is important is that it is very manageable to process, but that just means finding a trusted broker in the areas you work in. And the way I recommend it is by getting references. If you find a broker you like, speak to their speak to their clients, ask them what they've done, ask them what they've sold. Really, it's like an interview. I often ask my clients to speak to references of mine because I don't want them just using me because they like me. They need to understand what I do and how I can help them. So what I really do is I help people with their expectations. That's the first thing. The most important thing a broker has to do in Israel is really understand the client, because the prices are so crazy and your needs are very important. So what we're doing is a balancing act. And some people will just tell you, of course, you can get it, and they'll show you things which are way over budget that you want to look for. I'm going to be different. I'm going to understand what you're looking for. Tell you straight out you're in the right ballpark, you're not in the right ballpark, and help you reassess and readjust. Because the most important thing to me is, like Jane said, you don't want to rent in an area where you can't afford to buy. Exactly the same thing. I don't want you looking in an area to buy where you really are stretching so far that you're not going to live a comfortable life. That's absolutely not happening. I don't want that. So we really have to get things in order to help you out and get expectations clear. So often people ask me, how much can I buy an apartment for in Jerusalem? And I answer them, well, you know, there are places for $400,000, but you're probably not going to want to live in them. Okay. So I immediately turn that over to, in the areas you're going to want to live in. So I'll say Katamon, German Colony, Talbia, Anona, I'll touch on in a minute. These are the areas where we're talking about. So really, a 2-bedroom in the best areas, which is German Colony, Rehavia, is going to cost you $1 million US, okay? A 3-bedroom is going to cost you, and I'm so sorry, and people tell me, don't tell them, but I want to tell you, a 3-bedroom is going to cost you over $1.4 million US in the center of Jerusalem. So the question turns, I don't have $1.4 million. I have $800,000. And I turn to the people and I say, wow, that's a lot of money. Okay, let's start with that. It's a ton of money. What can I do with it in Jerusalem? So thank God there are areas which are perfectly pleasant where we can go. And those areas are the following. Firstly, Katamon itself. Katamon about 10 years ago was racing ahead with a German colony. It's slowed down. Nothing wrong with Katamon, I promise you. Just it's slightly slowed down. And therefore, it means that instead of 4.5 million shekel, a budget of 3.5 to 4 million might buy you a 3-bedroom. Might. but it could. And that would be, so that's 1,050,000 to 1,200,000. But what about my 800? The area that you all should talk to me about, if you want a free bedroom at less than $1 million US, or you want a cottage of 2,000 square feet at less than $2 million, is Arnona. Arnona is 5 minutes from Baka, literally on foot. The start of Arnona is 5 minutes away. And I say to people, if you want to be in a nice green residential area close to the Emek Rephaim without being in the heart of it, Arnona is a great area to consider and a bit more affordable. But there will be some people here who want to be in German Colony, want to be in Talbiya, and want to be in Rehavia. And that's great. And they might want 2,000 square feet. I can tell you that from what we were 3 years ago, we're now talking about 180 square meters. And I'm so sorry. I honestly don't like saying it. It's going to cost you, and Jane's waiting to hear what number I'm going to say. It's going to cost you above 3 million at least, US dollars, at least. But why do I say it? It's obviously not in my interest to say it, but I'm saying it because it's really important you understand that you want to know the truth. You want to know what these things are so you can start to work out the realistic nature of the situation, okay? So the mortgage broker who's not here today, but we have some really good ones, as Jane said, will tell you that if you qualify, you can borrow up to 50%, sometimes a little bit more, but no more than 60% while you're foreign resident. But it is age discriminated, which means that by around 80, 85, they want their money back. Okay. So if you're sitting there roughly around 60 and you qualify for a mortgage, you're good. You're going to get 20 to 25 years as long as you qualify. If you're in your 50s, you're even better. Those people in their 70s, don't think that you can't buy. Don't think that you can't borrow. But just understand that you're going to be paying back quicker. And I'd really want you to speak to an expert to get some very specific advice on such a thing. Anyway, what I really want to end with really is that as you walk around Jerusalem, you can walk down certain streets and you have five specific buildings, one after the other, and the prices can vary from 12 to 20,000 US dollars a square meter. Okay, and that's honestly true. And people ask me, how, why are we getting a good deal? Are we not getting a good deal? And that's why you need me or a trusted broker. Because if you just find it yourself and find a broker on the internet, you might think you've bought in Talbiya for $13,000 a square meter. But you really have to know the whole story. So, for example, certain buildings are significantly cheaper. Either they're very old, either there's no elevator. Either there's something called a shikun, which is like, in England, I call it council housing. I apologize. I don't know the American word for it. And that obviously should be, you know, nearly half the price of the luxury new build. And then in the middle, you have a Tama 38. We won't go into that too much. But Tama 38 is an older building that they refurbish and add floors on top. So obviously, that shouldn't be the same price as the new, but shouldn't be as cheap as the old. So you need someone to guide you through these things. And really, that is what's important, getting the right advice. I'm sorry if anyone can hear my voice, I apologize. It's about getting the important advice and getting the right support around you. And that's what me and Jane do. And we have lots of people that join a team. And obviously, me and Jane work a lot together. Jane will tell you, I'll tell you, we don't do, I wish we did every deal together, but we don't. But we do work as a great team. And we have other people like mortgage brokers, money transferers, everyone. Our aim is to make this process very manageable. That's the biggest thing. And it really has become, in the last 10 years, that's how long I've been doing this, a much more manageable process by the day. So yeah, thank you so much. We have a very busy doctor who I don't think has been able to join us, who was going to talk to us about Jerusalem. So what I'm going to do is I kind of need to take 2 minutes. So Jane, I want you to take over for 2 minutes because I need to just deal with one thing. I need to blow my nose. I know it sounds weird. I apologize, everyone, but I've been in bed all day. So I apologize. And then we're going to come back to Jerusalem in a minute. Okay.
Okay, so a lot of people, a lot of the things that we hear questions are, sometimes people, for instance, ask us either about Tama 38 programs or church land in Jerusalem. So that's a very common question. So I'm just going to touch on both of those. Tama 38 was basically a gentrification program and also earthquake retrofitting for the buildings. And it was quite successful. And they are kind of slowing down the process of approving new projects, but there still are a lot of projects that have been approved and are in the works. So there's either two ways to buy into a Tama. Tama is like initials for what the name of the new gentrification program is. So you can either buy an apartment that's undergone the remodel by the developer. What happens is all of the owners in a building would sell their building rights for the roof to a developer who then would revamp the building, usually add a safe room and an elevator, a better lobby, sometimes balconies, and kind of improve all of the existing apartments. And then he would build additional new apartments on top, and that would kind of be his payment. So they were, you know, it was kind of a bartering system, win-win for everybody. So you're either buying the new apartments, and those are basically new construction, like I spoke about before, or you're buying an apartment that was the old apartment, but it's gone through all of this retrofitting. So that opened up a lot of extra supply in Jerusalem. And there's still a lot of apartments that are in the pipeline for those projects, because basically, you know, land is limited and they allowed everybody to build upwards. So that's one option. And sometimes you can get apartments in good areas of Jerusalem that are undergoing that are part of those programs at kind of more of a reasonable cost. If you're buying one of the new apartments, again, all of the same issues with the index and the timing and all of those things need to be paid attention to. Regarding church land, all church land is not created equal. All the church land, you know, everybody groups it all in one kind of heading, but it depends on which church owns the land lease. And some of them have longer periods and automatic extensions, and some of them don't. There's a whole section of church land where the projects have been bought up. Sorry, the land leases have been bought up by the Ben David family, and the cost on those is still being negotiated. The beauty of church land is that you can usually get kind of a good deal in a great area because it's kind of got this registration issue. I have some clients who are totally into church land. They want to live in the best areas, Talbia near the King David Hotel, you know, Rehov Shalom Aleichem over here in Rehavia, all those kinds of areas. And they're not that concerned with preserving necessarily the value of the apartment that it would, you know, appreciate and go up. It's more kind of an investment for now. And I have other clients that won't touch it with a 10-foot pole because they're too worried about the variables and they want to make sure that it's going to be a solid investment and there won't be any debts and all those kinds of things. So it kind of depends on your constitution, what you're built for, and what you have in mind looking for those investments. But if you're looking at any church land deal, your attorney must look at the head lease, you know, the main land lease, and see how long it is until it runs out. Ben.
Thank you, Jane. Okay, so I know I'm going to do something that I planned not to do, which was we were going to have someone come on and talk about Jerusalem. I'm not a bad person to do it. I've lived there for 11 years, worked there for 11 years, but I'm going to try not to do it about the real estate perspective. It's actually quite funny. I have like 10 to 15 people I normally ask to do this, who I've all sold homes to, and they're all out for dinner together at the moment, which is just classic timing. But let me just tell you all about Jerusalem and what you need to know. I think what you need to know is that there's so many great areas to Jerusalem, and each area offers something a bit different. And I think there's certain ways to break down what areas of Jerusalem are for which people. So number one, I think affordability is also one way of always thinking about an area. So we spoke before about costs of rent, costs of purchase. I think pricing, understanding it before you take a long-term rental or buy something, you want to know how much the long-term is going to cost you. So the area. But also, just backing down on one thing that was said before, is that if you specifically love an area and you want to be there and you decide that I'm very comfortable moving every 3 or 4 years and I'm just going to rent for the next 30 years, that's absolutely fine. And that could be the way to get into a very specific area if you wish to. So that's one thing to consider. Number two is, you know, religious levels. How you like to experience a Shabbos, a Shabbat, basically. Because each area has really special aspects to it. There's definitely areas where the special aspect is that you're in Jerusalem and you don't feel Shabbat, which obviously most people here, me included, don't enjoy. But there is that aspect that is available. And I would say that's towards where the Tachana Rishona, the new train station that was built, has really, you know, it's amazing to visit during the week. There's plenty of kosher restaurants, lots of entertainment, but they have an area not open on Shabbos. And there's an area there called Abu Tor right next door. But some people love that area, even from people. Some people get a great feel for the area. It's a very different feeling to the rest of Jerusalem. But more PC, more standard. I would say you have Old Katamon, you have German Colony, you have Baka. And each one caters for, you know, the young Israel kind of person, depending where you fit on that structure. And it then boils down to what you're looking for in an area. Baka German Colony have this gorgeous architecture, this amazing character. I loved living in Baka. It was one of the most amazing things. The streets are so quaint. You just go to these little coffee shops, absolutely stunning area. But it's not for everyone. Some people want a bit more of a hustle bustle kind of area. Katamon itself, I don't know if anyone knows the Stieblach, but the Stieblach is what we call a minion machine. Okay, so you can go there any time of day and you're going to find the minion you're looking for. And on Shabbos, the same thing, revolving minions. And I've been with three clients this week that it's the weirdest thing. Not weirdest, that's the wrong word, but their only request is that we want to be near the Stieblach. It's not we want to be near Emek Rephaim. It's not that we want to be near coffee shops. It's that the Stieblach, and why? Because the guarantee of three easy minions a day is massive, totally understandable. And you know you're going to get it there. Also, there's Shirim there. Also, there are like group things that go on, and that's great. The other thing, near Anona, near Talpiot, near the Greek colony, you have the AACI. The AACI is a great organization that runs all kinds of like events, and they actually do all these cool things, which are now like, they, before COVID, they did a lot of traveling as groups, okay? So lots of like 50 plus groups of people. People went in groups of friends, people made new friends. And they did these amazing trips around the world. And I actually think they're about to restart them. And there's just very unique things. They do day-to-day events as well. You know, I'm trying to think of an example, but they have like book club. They have like, they play cards. They have all kinds of cool stuff going on. And it's just nice to have these kind of options around. So the main thing I'm saying about Jerusalem is the moment I understand you, or the moment you speak to friends and family, which is something I really advise people to do, we can get a feeling of what you're looking for. No one person should be in the same area just for the sake of it. There's obviously reasons and things to acclimatize to, whether that's family, whether that's affordability, whether it's synagogues, whatever it will be. So yeah, that's Jerusalem. We could talk about it for hours. And yeah, Jane, I'll turn back to you. We'll take some questions and we'll finish in about 5 to 10 minutes.
So if anyone has any questions, you can quickly write them in the chat, and that's the easiest way for us to see them. And then we answer them as they come up for a few minutes as soon as we can.
Actually, I want to thank you both for excellent presentation. One question or comment, I'm not sure which you'll take it as, came up. I'm just going to read it. The tax issue that you spoke about earlier, you mentioned that it's not applied if Aliyah is made within 2 years of signing the contract. And they're questioning, is there any kind of an extension because of the massive COVID slowdown and the ability of making Aliyah?
No, I wish that there was. That's a statutory time frame. The tax authority actually has no discretion on the time frame. So you have to establish your residency within 2 years of when the contract is signed, no matter, even if the apartment isn't finished, even if you're buying new construction. So that's the way that it is, unfortunately. That is the tax bracket for a first purchase, meaning a sole residential property. And that's the most financially expedient tax bracket. Now, if you do already own a property and you're now making Aliyah and you've never been a citizen before, you are actually allowed to use the OLEV tax rate, which is different than the residential tax rate. It's a little bit more expensive usually than the residential tax rate, but it allows Olim to also take advantage, even if you already own another property. But the catch is that the property that you're buying with the OLE tax reduction has to be used for your own personal residential use. The regular tax break doesn't have to be used specifically for your own residential use. Oh,
Jane.
Ed is on.
Ed Kaplan is on. Judy, can we unmute Ed?
Hi,
Ed. Hi, Dr. Kaplan. Good to see you. Okay, so now the 5-minute speech I just gave is in a way a bit redundant, but that's okay. Ed, firstly, tell them a bit about yourself, you know, tell them who you are and what you and your wife are considering in the next few years maybe doing. That's number one. Number two, I'd love if you just spoke briefly about your interactions with me and Jane, and then I'll ask you a few more questions, basically.
All right. You have a lot more facial hair since I saw you last, but I guess it was with COVID, it was a couple of years. So my name's Ed Kaplan. I'm medical oncologist in Skokie, Illinois. I've always had a dream to make Aliyah at some point, and things in life always seem to get in the way, but it as a way to making a stepping stone to that, after building a practice for a number of years, going through certain health issues in the family, things always delaying your ultimate decision, I finally figured this is the time I have to start getting serious about this, at least to get a place. And then to figure out how I would transition into full Aliyah at some point. And of course, when I decided to do this, something called the pandemic happens, and then it was quite difficult to proceed with the things we wanted to do. I mean, there's a lot more history with my son was in yeshiva and going a lot of times to visit after I had lost my wife to cancer. And decided I needed to make this change. Since then, I've been remarried, and we both are very much in the situation where we want to have a place. So we found Ben actually through Jane, who we got from a friend that had been working with her and just couldn't speak enough about her, and we went there and met with Ben, and he was just incredible with no pressure, of course, just showing us around and knowing what our desires were. It seemed like we were his only client. I mean, he was just giving us the attention, and I never expected that. We had spoken to people before, and it was never that kind of feeling that there was somebody actually looking out for me. And it's been more than that since COVID hit and everything's had to be remote. And we've had multiple trips planned that have been canceled because of the country deciding to close down only when they saw that I bought a ticket. So it was so nice to have Ben and Jane that I could work with from here. And we're in the process of finalizing some things now that they've just made. The only way I could have done it with everything going on is because of them. And it's been a pleasure to work with them. And I hear the stories about what's happened to people before, and I just haven't experienced anything negative. It's really been, and I'm not just, I have no reason to just say this. In fact, if I wasn't happy, this would be the time and place to tell you that, right? No, it's been a mechaya. It's been really such a blessing.
Thank you, Ed. So I guess I want to ask you about, I don't want to discuss your real estate as such, but I want to discuss the areas that you know that you've kind of experienced a little bit. And the good news is I hope to see you in a few weeks and you get to experience them more. That's the current hope. But, what feeling do you get on Emek Rafaim, the Bucca area, like just as a visitor, like how does it feel to you?
Well, part of it is we have very good friends that live in Katamon. So when we visited, we've stayed with them or we visited them. And so we decided for sure Jerusalem and that side of Jerusalem was where we think we want to end up. And just the whole emigrant, you know, we going as a visitor early on, you think you have to be, you know, spitting distance from the Kotel. You have to be in the areas where all the big hotels are. But going to Emek Rephaim and to the German colony and Katamon has just been real a feel of home, of a neighborhood. And it's where we'd like to have a place. So that's where we've been focusing our efforts. I love the Tachana Rishana, the whole area around the train station, the Rakevet Street. It's just such a nice feel, and the people there that we've been in contact with have been great. So that's where we've been focusing. Is that what you want? What you're asking?
Yeah, that's. I want you to say whatever you want to say. That's great. One question I actually don't know before I've asked you this, but like, have you ever davened in Nitzanim on Shabbos?
I've been at with my friend. We've gone to the places in Katamon. I'm trying to remember. I think it's an OU facility, or there's one that on Shabbos they have the davening. It's an Anglo davening.
Anyway, tell me about your feeling of shuls in the area. That's basically what I was aiming for. Like what you've davened out, how it feels on a Shabbos.
Say that again.
How it feels on a Shabbos. Like what, you know, how comfortable it is. Does it feel modern, those areas? You know, what does it feel like?
Absolutely. And to have choices is wonderful. I also, there was a new shul that I went with him. It's been a couple of years already because of COVID, but where I was doing Daf Yomi in this brand new shul was an English one, so that was great for us. The shuls themselves on Shabbos, we've been to a number of different ones, but you know, when you're there as a visitor, so you think you want to go to the Kotel. I've gone to the Old City for things. My son was in yeshiva in the Old City for 2 years. I would go there, but in the neighborhood itself, we've spent a few Shabbosim, and it's been it's very modern feeling. It's very but yet you're there, you're in Jerusalem. You know, you're half of our tefillot, if not all of them, half Jerusalem is a theme, and there we're just right there. And it's an incredible feeling.
Amazing. No, go on, Ed. Carry on, no finish.
Carry on. I just said I haven't spent as much time there as I'd like to. Hopefully we're going to be doing that now that we're looking for areas. So we want to be able to spend Chagim and Shabbos there more.
Understood. Ed, firstly, thank you so much. I know how busy you are. I really appreciate your time. Jane, do you want to ask Ed anything very quickly or we're fine?
Sorry, I was just trying to unmute myself. No, hi, Ed. Good to see you.
Hi, Jane. Nice to see you.
Thanks for joining us. I think that it's been an interesting process because, you know, you looked at a lot of different areas. And do you have any like pieces of advice for people when they're looking, or, you know, would you do anything differently than how you had when you looked at for property?
Well, I would have come to you guys first. That's one thing, but
we didn't even pay you to say that, but okay.
I think one thing is to, if you don't have some connection to family or friends, is to get a feel for it, but you know you want to be in Jerusalem, is to get a feel for the neighborhoods without even thinking about a place, just getting a feel for the neighborhoods, certainly spend time there and walk around, not as a tourist, but as somebody in the neighborhood on Shabbos or during the week, go to the cafes, just on Emek Rephaim, it's wonderful just to stroll down there. And then if you're going to start looking, okay, look at a map and sit down with someone like you guys and say, okay, these are, you know, tell me about the neighborhoods, about the different flavors. Let's go visit some places. That's how we did initially. We told you the kind of place we're looking for. And then you came up with a group of properties and spend a day at least just, you know, starting out by looking at some of those, then narrowing it down. And that's the process we're on now. I mean, that's the kind of thing I would suggest, doing it with a guide like you, who's got a knowledge of the real estate and the neighborhoods and the things that people should be watching for.
Understood. Ed, thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it so much. And we look forward to seeing you very soon.
Hopefully soon. Take care.
Thank you so much. Take care.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
There was another question about the price range for Modi'in and also the rentals there.
Sure. Jane, I mean, I can give a very basic, but Jane, can you give a bit more than me, do you reckon?
Yeah, I mean, you're definitely not finding anything in Modi'in for under, you know, mid 2.5 million shekels. Those are apartments kind of near the center area that we were talking about. There are some newer areas. I'm not as familiar with the variety, you know, the range of demographic in those areas. But they often, a lot of the newer areas have more rentals because they have more apartments. It's important to realize in Israel that there aren't really any rental complexes, meaning that most buildings, if there are apartments for rent, they're individually owned and then those are rented out. However, in Modi'in, there's something brand new that's under construction that's meant to be ready in a couple of years across from Moria Center in Buchman, which is where a lot of Anglos live. That's where Ruthie Kramer lives, where, you know, that she was on before. And that is a new project, which is called long-term rental. And that's kind of a new program that's been promoted by the Israeli government to kind of fill in the gaps of people that don't want to necessarily spend the amount that you'd have to spend for rentals. And you're renting it directly from the contractor. And so basically he wins the tender by having to, he has to undertake to rent those out. I think it's for a period of 10 years and before he's allowed to sell them. So that kind of gives a lot of people the security of having a long-term rental in a great area. I don't actually know the prices on that yet, but it's really exciting development in the Israeli real estate market because there's such insecurity with rentals. You know, there's not a lot of places that you can rent something and be for sure, you know, be confident that in 5 years it will still be for rent because it could get sold. So regarding the prices, the rents are expensive. There's definitely not anything for rent under 6,000 shekels, even the smaller apartments. And then it can go on up from there. You know, really, you know, if you're in a house, it can be very, very expensive.
Thank you, Jane. Just a couple of things. Our details will get emailed out when Judy sends out the OU email later. Just the two people messaged me about areas to explore on a pilot trip. My chat isn't working. Please email me. My email will come out and I'll answer you with pleasure. And also the person who said they couldn't get a hold of me, I'm so sorry. I was traveling back from Australia. Please just drop me an email and I'll reply to you tonight because I can't reply in the chat. Besides that, if there's no more questions, I think for me and Jane, it was such an honor to get to speak to you all. It was so lovely. I hope everyone found that really helpful and informative. And yeah, Judy, unless there's anything else, I think we're basically done.
Okay, I want to thank both Jane and Ben and your guests for really giving us a lot of very valuable information, and we really appreciate it. Everybody will get, of course, the recording later with the materials that Jane has already sent us, and of course your email, so you can all be in touch with Ben and Jane with your various questions. If you missed the first program that we did in January, you can find that in the Spirit Archives, ou.org/spirit. So I want to thank everybody for joining us today. Next week we will be back with Carly Friedman, who will be speaking on generational generosity, how to instill the love of tzedakah to your offspring. Carly was part of a program that we've highlighted a number of times through Spirit, the OU's Impact Accelerator. So we'll be talking more about that next week. Look for your emails. You'll get all the information there. Thank you so much, everybody, for joining us. We have not a question, just a compliment. Okay. But take care, Ben, before Shalema. Well, hope to see you in a few weeks.
Thank you. Have a great day, guys.
Okay. Thank you, everybody.